You are listening to Within Tolerance, a podcast for machinists by machinists. I'm your host, Dylan Jackson of Purity Machining. And this week, I am very happy to welcome Jeff Hooper of Hooper Machine and Design and Chip Monkeys. Welcome, Jeff. I'm really happy to get to catch up. It's been, what, 6 years or 4 years or something like that?
Well, the last time we saw each other was in front of the Haas booth. So we're talking pre-pandemic.
Yeah. I can't remember if it was 2016 or 2018 IMTS, but it's been a while. It's really good to see you and hear you, and welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's good to see you too.
So what does Chip Monkeys do? What does Hooper Machine and Design do? You know, where can people find you online? All the good stuff.
Hooper Machine and Design is just a job shop, you know, very simple. We got a couple of mills and a lathe, and we manufacture anything that'll come through the door. Just about, if it fits in our machine, we'll quote it and give it a shot. And Chip Monkeys is just a little side project we're doing where we're making some YouTube videos on how to process parts, how to use Fusion, how to use the Haas machine, but more at a workflow level instead of just like a how to hit this button if you want this, more educational. You can go to the website, download projects. We got one video up now on five axis, how to five axis, setting up a trunnion, that kind of stuff. Just kind of walks you through the whole process and a little bit about five axis programming. But we're just getting started on this. We got another video we're going to drop, I think this week or next week. And we got some products that we sell, and you can download a project. That's the goal anyway. And then watch the video that corresponds to it so that you can learn how to manufacture that and kind of get an idea of a high level workflow of manufacturing.
That's great. More content like that needs to be out there. So I applaud you for doing it.
Yeah, it's something I've always enjoyed doing. I like teaching. I love manufacturing, but I love teaching. So, you know, it's worth pursuing, you know, fills a hole in my soul.
That's great. Well, let's get into your backstory then. How did you come to, you know, own your own company and start Chip Monkeys, start Hooper Machine and Design, all that stuff?
Okay. All right. Well, I guess, you know, my dad, when I was born, he was running a machine shop. He started, it was called Hooper Manufacturing. You know, we're not a creative family when it comes to naming things. But Hooper Manufacturing, he manufactured machine guns and things like that, anti-aircraft weapons, 80 millimeter grenade launchers. And, you know, he was the first company to start manufacturing 50 caliber machine guns since World War II. And he was pretty young. I think he might have barely been in his 30s when he started it, because it was running in the 80s. So I grew up with, you know, machining, you know, and, you know, going into see my dad's shop and everything. So it wasn't like fantastic for me to see a machine shop, you know. It's like, that's just how I was raised. You know, he'd come home and that's what we talked about. When I was 17, I ended up dropping out of high school because things weren't going good and I just wasn't interested. And at that point in our lives, he was a teacher at the Tennessee Technology Center in Nashville. He started teaching in a Murfreesboro school, and he was just an instructor, but he was responsible for purchasing all the machine tools for Tennessee. So, you know, anybody that's trusted with $30 million to go buy, you know, I don't necessarily agree with his machine choices now, but I can see, you know, why he did what he did then. I mean, he bought wire EDM, CNC mills. He tooled up the Tennessee machine shop program. And after I dropped out of high school, I ended up just doing his class because I didn't have an option. I'm his kid, so that's what I had to do.
Right.
And, you know, as far back as my lineage goes on both sides, you know, all the way to blacksmiths, my name Hooper literally means the blacksmith that makes the hoops for the barrels. And the Cooper would be the guy that made the wood slats. So as far back on both of my sides, it's all manufacturing. So I was going to get into manufacturing one way or another. And he, you know, he's trying to get me motivated. And So I did what he asked me to do, and I joined the class, and man, it just bored me to tears. I hated machining. I had to wait till I was 18 to join the class, and I had done all the math and the book work. That's what we called it, the book work. And then when I got into the class at 18, I was done with all the book work, and I just went into the machines and started, get a project, and it was all right, turn a thread on a lathe, adjust a compound rest, and eventually graduated to doing the CNC machines. And then you pull out the book and you code everything manually, and it is all right. But I just didn't see it as something that would that'd be interesting to me to do for a living. This is going to kill me, if I had to do this.
Right.
And I had been to every IMTS since I was old enough to walk through the door, and I've seen all the equipment. So for me, it was just like, this is everyday stuff. I wasn't impressed.
Right.
You're raised in a family that does farming. So farming is just what everybody does, apparently, because that's what you did, growing up. But manufacturing is pretty cool. And I did appreciate that about it. But then I went to the lamest. And when you sent me this question, I had the guy go back in my mind, like, what was that tipping point where it became interesting? And that's, I walked into the lamest of all trade shows in some hotel in ghetto Nashville. It was an educational trade show. So boring, I mean, you walk in there and everybody's got like little tables set up that you would set up at a garage sale. Like, it's not fancy. It's pretty lame. And then, I saw my first 3D printer. We're talking 95, 97. That object jet 3D printer. And I picked up this little wafer thing they glued together. And I was like, cool. I don't see a value here.
Right.
I'm just kind of walking around. And then I see the stupidest thing on a monitor. And it's a little 3D model of a Jetsons character, the alien with the big bubble head. And the guy was like rotating it on the screen. And I was like, well, that's kind of cool. At least it's moving and doing something. Then I realized that SolidWorks. And I was familiar with, we were using FeatureCam in the class. And you can model something. And solid models were kind of not really new, but for FeatureCam, it was new because everything was IGES and surfaces.
Right.
And then he showed me an assembly. And then he started putting mates together, and then things could move. And I was like, and then I got, lightning going off in my mind here, all the light bulbs going off. And I'm like, this is what manufacturing is missing. I need to be able to model. If I want to make something, I need to be able to design it, design the fixtures, draw the stock, draw the, not necessarily the machine, but maybe if it was sitting on a platter for a fourth axis, which we had at school. I was like, this is what I need. And so I went to my dad and told him, and at this point I was just about graduated in 99. And I said, we got to get SolidWorks and we got to have it in the class. You got to get an educational license for this. And so he did. He put it in the classroom, and I sat there after I graduated. I didn't even go to my own graduation because I didn't care about that stuff. it's just a formality. All I need to do is know how to do this stuff and I'll be fine,
Right.
And I sat in front of SolidWorks for 6 months and I got hooked, and I started designing products for BMX bikes because that's what I was doing at the time, and drew up the fourth axis, the platter, the stock, and then I programmed from each orientation. I put it into, took all the 3D models and put them inside FeatureCam and programmed them and started making products. And when I got to machine, all the thinking was done. All the fixtures were designed, and that's when manufacturing clicked and started being interesting. This connection between a full CAD software and a full CAM software. After that, I started teaching, doing math, teaching math and teaching blueprinting and things for the class. And I never learned the math. I'm not going to lie. Just trigonometry and all that stuff bored me. But when I got a job and I had to do it to teach people, and that you have to stay one lesson ahead of the class. As long as you stay one lesson ahead, they think you're a genius. And then, I'd have like one smart student. He was way smarter than me. And he would be like, hey, I'm ready to move on. And I said, not yet. Not yet. You're not ready to move on. And that's when I learned trigonometry. So all my education really came after that class, just because that's what I wanted to do now. I was like, I wanted to manufacture products. And so I got a job that allowed me to work fewer hours during the week. And then when I got home, I had a bootleg version of SolidWorks that I just learned on, you know. So, and then I got my first job. One of my first jobs was running a machine shop with a Prototrack, which if you ever program one of those, it's like pulling your hair out. I mean, it's all so basic. And, you know, you're doing math on pieces of paper. You know, they wouldn't give me a computer in this shop. And the guy probably thought I was a mad scientist, you know. You know, just trying to make an octagon shape, you know, I'm doing all the math and trying to figure out a toolpath, but it's all manual, you know?
Right.
But he wouldn't buy me software. And my next job was using CATIA in an aerospace. And when I saw CATIA, then I saw the SolidWorks with the feature cam, but it was in one environment.
Right.
And we're talking 2003 at this point.
Well, and what a leap forward from doing stuff on, you know, paper to Class A surface enabled CAD CAM and all that stuff. Like that's high level stuff.
Yeah, that got me thinking. I had I think it's V5, and it was somewhere in the early 2000s I had it, and I thought this is exactly how manufacturing software should be. And this is how manufacturers and machinists should be thinking now, is with CAD and CAM working together and not, you know, in a machine putting up Joe blocks and sweeping in pins and all this stuff. You know, the machinist stuff, that's good. But at the end of the day, like, you know, 99% of your problems are going to be solved in front of a computer and not in front of the machine, you know?
Yeah. The last shop I worked at before I went full time had FeatureCAD when I started there, and I switched them over to HSMWorks because we were using SolidWorks. And I was like, listen, guys, like, you need an integrated CAD CAM system. Like, it doesn't make any sense. You know, I think I worked in engineering for 6 months or so and was asking our like head engineer like questions, and he was like, I don't know, I don't really hold any allegiance to FeatureCAM, it's just what we have. And I was like, okay, but like, we design everything in SolidWorks, then you have to import it into FeatureCAM, and then anytime you make a change you have to re-import it into FeatureCAM. I was like, this is stupid, like, let's get on the you know, integrated bandwagon and move forward. And the second they saw that, they're like, oh, okay, yeah let's do that.
Yeah, you re-import it, and it's like, okay, well, you're a contour, and you're roughing, and you're a hole. You got to reassociate all that geometry when, you know, it could just be instantaneous and automated, you know.
Exactly. So you went from this aerospace shop with CATIA. How did you get to your own shop?
Well, I ended up moving to Chattanooga in about 2013, and I got a job as a guy that was running a R&D shop, and we made. Basically, I just cut styrofoam all day for casting.
Oh,
and
cool.
It was really big parts, but I would just machine them. And then, you know, I'd have to calculate the shrinkage and all that for the casting process. But they're big valves and everything for Mueller. And that job was a blast. And because it's R&D, there's no time crunch. You know, they're like, you know, as long as we get it done this year, we just got to develop technology. And that's all we need to do. And so it was real laid back, and I had time to kind of educate myself more on software. And that's around the time that Fusion 360 started coming out. So I got on the beta versions of those because they had bought MasterCam. And to me, that just, it's such a big fat waste of time back then. I mean, I know people love it, and it does fantastic toolpath, but getting to that point, it made me wish for death. It just wasn't, I mean, great post-processors, lots of money. And so when I saw the beta version of Fusion, I jumped on that. I just thought I could start my own shop at some point. And now you got three ways you can start a shop, really. One is you have a product that you want to manufacture, which I really didn't. I just wanted to have my own shop. But if you got your own product, you have to buy the equipment and the machinery and the software and everything that can manufacture that product. So you're kind of locked in on the equipment you need.
Right.
And, or you got a product like, you know, Seth was talking about, he had to machine something where he knew he was going to be in that industry. he was going to be holding those tolerances. He had to have that equipment, and it's expensive like that. But for me, I just wanted to start just a general job shop. And I had a goal of just starting the cheapest shop known to man. If I was going to break a record in the world, it was going to be, how do I start a machine shop dirt cheap and keep myself out of debt and out of trouble? And we were living in suburbia, and I was like, well, I'm just going to buy a CNC machine, put it in the garage. And I had no money to my name. And I was working with a friend of mine, and he had designed this little thing. He's like, I need 1,000 of these little plastic parts. And I was like, okay. And he's like, and they're $3 a piece, you know? So the job at the end, I would have made $3,000, but I didn't have a machine or anything. So I stayed after at work and then made them from Friday to Saturday straight, like 32 hours straight.
Oh my goodness.
At the end, I couldn't feel my hands and I was delirious, you know, from staying up and running a machine that long. But then at the end of the job, I went up and delivered it. They were happy. They gave me $3,000. So I found a CNC machine. I looked at a mini mill and a Tormach, and I was like, well, I want to be a real machine shop. I don't want to dabble. I need to be able to hold a big piece of steel and cut it.
Right.
So a Tormach wasn't going to get it. And a mini mill was so small, even though it could probably cut a piece of steel, I'd be cutting one piece at a time for the rest of my life on this little thing. And so I scoured the internet. One of the best places to find used machinery is eBay, because everybody advertises on eBay. But nobody buys a machine on eBay. You find out who's selling it and you contact them directly, and then you negotiate, you know.
Right.
And so I found this. I knew I wanted single phase because I didn't want to drop 10 grand on a, or 7 grand on a phase converter, because I'm trying to be cheap. And who knows if it was going to work. And I found the CNC machine, a TM2P, a Haas. It clicked every box. You know, it has it's single phase, so I could wire it in. I just drop a 220, breaker in and run the wire directly to the machine. It had probes, a tool probe and a part probe. And it had 40 inches of X travel. So I could set up, you know, 4 or 5 double clamping vices and actually get some work done, because I'm still working my other job. So right. I needed to automate, you know? And so with the probes and a big X travel, I could set up a bunch of parts when I came home from work, hit go, and then go back inside the house and just relax. And if it, you know, it does the roughing operation, and then you can tell it to go over and touch the tool and make sure it's still there, break detection.
Yeah.
And, automate for a job shop as much as possible. And that allowed us to get started. And the machine was only $27,000. So that's $400 a month. And I figured if I can't, I took that $3,000 and between rigging for $600, the first machine payment for $400, shipping for $1,000. And then I found the cheapest place to buy holders and tool, DZ Sales. The stuff would barely make a part. I had to replace all the set screws and the holders, and then found cheap places to buy end mills. And so for $3,000, I started the shop, and there was no money out of my pocket. And now that machine's paid for. So, staying out of debt and not working too hard has been my main goal.
Okay.
And well,
this might be a good time to go into what machinery you currently have.
I have 3 Haas machines. Before I bought Mazaks and Hercos and lots of other machinery for other shops. But I went with the Haas because if I had a product that I need to manufacture, tolerances, or I was just going to be running the same thing day in and day out, then maybe a heavier machine would certainly be worth it. But for a Haas machine, they shine for a job shop. The control's nice. It's all hard buttons, which I like. I don't have to go searching through a bunch of touch screens. It's not XP embedded software that probably crashed or could get hacked. You know, it's a pretty solid controller.
Right.
It's not the fastest. They lock you out of everything. Everything's an extra.
Right.
But if you negotiate with them, like when you buy a machine, you get a competitive quote, maybe two competitive quotes, and Haas will beat their quote up and get you what you want at a really good price. Yeah. Also, enter, if you're poor like me, you had to enter every contest that came up. And so I won Vices on Instagram. You know, I'd say that Vice is worth, you know, $1,100. I would put $500 worth of my time into winning it. And that paid off. I won the orange Vice by calculating the proper weight. But I downloaded the 3D models. I applied all the material. I calculated mass ounces to pounds. And then I submitted, and he was like, you were within, you know, half an ounce. But I modeled every aspect of the vice so I could win it.
Oh, you know? Wow.
And then I won another vice from Five Axis. But I put a lot of effort into winning that. And then Haas, my local dealer, had a contest. Who enters the most complex, unique part wins $10,000. And I was like, well, so I put a couple days because it's worth $10,000 to me, right? I manufacture and design a product that I think would win and get the most votes. And they were just trying to advertise for an app. And so I won $10,000 and a trip to go to the Haas factory. And Mark Terryberry gave me a tour of the Haas factory. But then I just took that $10,000. I turned it around and took it off a machine. And so then I got a VF1 brand new with everything I wanted for less than around $50,000.
Wow.
So, again, knocking my payment down, keeping my payment down. And those machines, they run fantastic. I hold 1,000s all day long. Just delivered a job this morning and everything was plus or minus one. And I used the probes to check it. Yeah, I double check everything with, you know, micrometers and everything. But everything seems to stay. Even my TMP that I bought 4 or 5 years ago still holds one. It's got some backlash now, but I ran a ball bar on it and you tweak it all out and you can still hold good tolerances with them.
That's awesome. So you've got a VF1 TMP, looks like a TL behind you as well.
Yep. I got TL1.
Okay.
Found it used on the Haas website and negotiated for it. And they shipped it out here and the thing works fantastic, you know, for a prototype shop. And I don't have any employees. So, you know, I'm not doing any production. I'm just doing prototyping. You know, I can't do production. You can't afford me to sit in front of a machine. I'm the programmer setup guy and all of that. You know, I don't have a $15 hour guy sitting in front of a machine. So,
yeah. So people might know you best from your BMX fist, your handlebar fist.
Yes. Yeah. A publicity stunt.
Yeah. Which would seem to work really well because I think everybody knows that part.
Yeah. And the reason is like, I looked at Fusion when they were first coming out, they called me, because I'm, and, you know, it's not because I'm, you know, the best machinist in the world and I was selling myself real well and marketed myself real well. They literally said, you're the only one using our software to make stuff. So out of the barrel of one dude, they picked me. because I designed it when it was all beta and they had T-splines and I was like literally in 1992 or 1995 I was sitting at the bike track and a good friend of mine was like, he's like, if you're gonna make a stem in that fancy machine shop class you're going to, he's like, make one like a fist, man. He's like, I want to see it holding the bars and I know I'm secure. He was messing with me, but I tried to do it in feature cam back in 97. And I did it, you know, trying to, you know, draw those fingers and, the, you know, it's impossible, you know, to sculpt that in surfaces and then machine it. But when I saw Fusion, I was like, hey, I could just joke around. And literally, it took me about 10 minutes to draw that fist. I closed one eye and I held it up to the screen like I was, and I put like a tube in my hand that was 7/8. And then I closed one eye and I traced it on the screen. Turned it into a solid and they cut the stem up and I was like, I'm going to make these things. And then I made a few of them and we're actually running a batch of them this month. I had someone call me from New York yesterday and says he wants one. So we're going to run about a batch of 50. So people still have them. They're using them out there, but it was just a publicity stunt because Fusion had T-splines and CAM and modeling, and I wanted to use all of them to make a product, which I couldn't have done before.
Right. Definitely. So that's under the Backhand Bikes name, right?
Yeah. I had started Backhand Bikes with a friend of mine, and he ended up passing away, got real sick. And so it was no sense keeping Backhand Bikes going because there's no way I could have done it by myself. But we designed some other products for other bike companies, and we had a good time while we did it.
Yeah, because I was trying to remember what your Instagram handle was before Chipmunkies. And I was like, man, I don't think it was Hooper Machine Design. And I was like trying to think, but yeah, the fist reminded me. So that was the first product of yours that I saw. And I think, like you said, that was the first T-spline product that I saw from Fusion that I was like, oh, this is not just like, you know, an add-in that doesn't make any sense. Like, it's an actual pretty cool feature.
Oh man. Well, if that's what you got from it, that's what Autodesk wanted you to get from it.
Well, that kind of brings us into some of the questions that I had on here, because that, you know, if you look at your Instagram, you do all kinds of oddball jobs. So I had the question, you know, how do you get all these oddballs? I mean, you've got some like machine statues that look like they should be casted. You've got, you know, clear lenses, you know, things that I think most job shops don't touch or don't even know is out there as work. It seems like you get to do. So how do you find all these?
Well, I mean, you just answered it, right? They don't touch it. And years ago, like right when I started my business, I went and built my website. And a shop called me and they said, hey, we're stuck. We got to have these things done in the morning. And I'm getting off work. It's like 5 o'clock. He said, we got to have these things done in the morning. And they're window panels for a speedboat, a racing boat. You know, the panels that come up on the side and they're all 3D. I don't know why they did them, but they did. And I walk in, I got like a little English riding hat. You know, I look like I just got on a plane, came from, you know, Britain, you know, right. And I had a little MacBook Pro, Air, you know, uh-huh. Little MacBook Air, you know, we're talking about 2014. I got Fusion on it. You know, I walk in there, I don't even have a charger, and I walk into this machine shop and they're all rough looking. I mean, they all work in the machine shop, you know, and it's a rough looking shop, and they got this thing up on the machine. And so I sit down, I open up my little laptop and pull out my mouse and my little 3D controller here. And I start programming all the machines in their shop. And then about 2 a.m. or 3 a.m., I close it. I pick it up. I walk outside the door. I say, good luck. You guys can run those things. And after that, I made an impression on them. Like this little dork, this little geek comes in, programs all our machines, and they were using Edgecam, and it looked like from the 90s. You know, there's no way they were going to do this.
Right.
And after that, anytime a weird job came in, and even to this day, I mean, well, it's been several years ago, you know, 8 years ago, or not 8 years ago, but 6 years ago or so, the word is spread from me doing stuff like that around Chattanooga, where if a job comes into a shop, like the Darksabers, you know, an 18-year-old kid's like, I want to make these Darksabers. And so he walked into a shop and they're like, we ain't going to touch it because it's a rabbit hole. We're not going to go down. That's too much time. He comes in my shop and he's like, can you do this? And I said, yes. Do I want to? No, I'm going to lose my bacon on this. I know I'm going to lose money on it, but I love it. You know, I want the challenge. And I'm like, okay, you know, like if you, and he cloud sourced the project, everybody, like all these cosplay guys were like, we want an aluminum, you know, Darksaber from The Mandalorian.
Right.
And so we figured out how to do it. And I just treated my 5-axis mill, which is basically the TM2P with a trunnion in it. So I got probably $50,000 in a 5-axis mill. And I just treated it like a 3D printer. And I'd go up there and I'd, you know, dovetail a part into a, and then it would run for like an hour to make one component. So in a month, you know, it's making $30 an hour on these parts, but it's completely automated and I don't have to touch it. I just pull the chips out and throw another part in and hit go, you know? So I got all those projects cause everybody turns them down and I'm just a guy that doesn't want to say no because I look at the challenge and I want to do it.
Right.
And now I got that reputation in town as if he can't do it, nobody's going to touch it.
That's pretty amazing. So like, what about the drone submarine viewport that you made? Cause that was absolutely gorgeous. Like, I can't believe how amazingly clear that is after polishing. So like, how do you get a job like that?
One of the good things that we did, like we started a cheap shop, you know, everything we did, we tried to get the machine and pay it off so I don't have to kill myself. And one of the aspects of getting something cheap is moving into the business development center. It's called the incubator, and every city has one. Mm-hmm. And it's an industrial space that the government subsidizes so that you can go in and you got a time limit. They pay for your electricity. And it's like $1,000 a month for rent, you know, so it's cheap. And I was right downtown Chattanooga, which was kind of a dream of mine. I was like, if I'm going to start a shop, it's going to be cheap. It's going to be downtown. It's a miracle that all of it worked out the way I envisioned it. Got a big bay door so everybody downtown could drive by, and I put the machine right in the worst position, for ergonomics or industrial design, like right in the middle of the floor, you know. But if you drove by, you could see a CNC machine working. And plus, everybody else in the incubator is all a startup. So they're making all kinds of weird stuff that some of it will pan out, some of it won't. But, you know, it's a hub for catching all these startup companies, and they all need manufacturing. So putting myself in there put me in contact with companies like Western Electric, Branch Technology, which has some of the biggest 3D printers in the world, and, you know, making all their weird odds and ends, for all their weird techie startups for robots and stuff like that. And so, getting in that building put me in touch with all these people. And from there, word of mouth spread that we were willing to do the weird stuff, you know. Okay. And, what really makes us, what gives us the ability to do weird stuff is it kind of goes back to just knowing how to use CAD in conjunction with CAM fully, you know, getting the full benefit, designing everything. And so you don't have to touch off a machine, you design it, where you set your zero once and everything from that part orients from those positions, you know, right. Really taking full advantage. If from early on, I hadn't have done that, then I couldn't do this weird stuff. You know, I got to know how to use CAD really.
Makes sense. Definitely. What's been your favorite design challenge of maybe the last year?
You know, the statues were fun. There was some design in that, but mainly it was a sculptor who, there's a big car show that happens in Chattanooga, and people come from all over the world. I mean, like, the lead singer from AC/DC, he loves cars. So of course he's here. So there's like a lot of famous people that come in town. They show off their ridiculous cars. And so they had a guy, an artist, local artist, who sculpted a 1920s race car driver and had all these things cast in bronze. So you nailed it. It's like from the beginning, you were like, this looks like it should be cast. Absolutely. It should be cast. And it was cast for the car show last year. But then the car show came up this year, and they had also asked him to make a statue. And so he sculpted out of clay the huge statue that they're going to put downtown, 7.5 feet, and it collapsed before casting. And he had weeks in it and probably a lot of his own money, and it didn't work. And it sent him into a mental institution.
Oh, my goodness. That's terrible. So,
how do you recapture what this artist had done for the next car show? And so a guy comes in, he's like, can you duplicate this statue that he's not available this year, because he's in a mental institution.
Oh my goodness.
So, I was like, well, yeah, I mean, we just got to send it to Atlanta, get it 3D scanned and make it, you know, figure out how to make it. And it's a foot tall. And I've only got 16 inches of travel in Y, so I had to turn my trunnion sideways, got the 3D scan and fusion. Fortunately, it can machine a mesh, and I used the rotary option. And then I did some tilting so I could get in and do all the undercuts and rotating at all the different angles and everything.
Okay.
So that was a fun project. programming wise, and it made me wish that I had a lot more CPU, because when you start doing 4,000 step overs on 20 statues that are a foot long, 6 inches cube, it's a lot of calculations. And then a little TM2P with its weak control. I mean, high speed machining is overstated. It's slow. And, you have to set the feed rate where it can calculate the toolpath, and then it'll pause and calculate, and it'll slow down. So you got to slow down the feed rate so you don't go at these little pausing marks in your part. So it literally took forever to make those things. But we were the only ones that could do it. We're one of the only companies in town with a real five-axis machine willing to use it for weird stuff.
Right.
So that was a fun product. But the Darksabers, we had to model that and machine it. And so we had to design how it would bolt together. That's more of a design project. And definitely check that out on Instagram on the Chipmunkies, because those are showing up on TikTok. That's how he's marketing them. But they're better than the original by far,
That's awesome.
I'm sure the original one's probably just 3D printed and, painted real nice, but ours were literally five axis machined on every angle. And then you reach in the machine and break them off and bolt it together, and that's it.
Oh, I bet that's so satisfying. How do you, when you're developing the process for that statue, how did you decide, when was a small enough ball mill? Because I imagine with a mesh like that, you could go down to a 5,000 ball mill and still be rest machining some stuff out of it. So at what point were you okay, this is enough resolution to stop?
When you start stepping down in ball mills and changing a lot of tools, then you're breaking up your surface and you got to start blending and then you're talking about a mesh. So how do you section off a mesh? You got to draw sketches, because you can't just say, machine this area, because you've got no geometry you're working with. It's a bunch of triangles.
Right.
So you could go down a rabbit hole of kind of what you're talking about and start coming up with sketches. And the problem with Fusion is you can only sketch in the CAD portion. You cannot sketch boundaries in the manufacturing, environment in Fusion. And so they called me not too long ago just to ask some questions. They call me every once in a while, for the in-process stock. Al Watmo reached out to me and a couple of other guys and said, how are we going to handle this? And so I recommended every time you select something, you need to know where you are and how you're going to get to the next step. So we need to have, and about a year later they put it in there. So
yeah, it's really nice.
Talking to them like that is real nice. And so, a couple of months ago, I was like, we need to be able to sketch, need to have a divide, sketch in CAD for manufacturing design, or for manufacturer design process. And then for manufacturing, you need to be able to sketch for boundaries and things like that. NX has a good workflow for that. You can actually save boundaries and then reuse them for different processes down the line. But Fusion needs to get into that. And I'm sure they will. They will. But they haven't got their first sketching thing working great yet. So when they once they get that figured out, all the bugs worked out of that, you're using it and you're like, you are not fully defined, pal. And it's like, I'm fully defined. I'm like, no, you're not. I'm sure we all go through that.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. So what was the smallest tool you used on those statues?
Just like a 3/16.
And, that's not bad at all.
I didn't break it up. I didn't want to do any blending. It looked much better if I just did one rotary pass nice and slow and kept a uniform toolpath than trying to get like a 1/16 in there on the eyes and then trying to feather out where it blends. And I tried that on one and he looked scary, and I was like, no, we just need nice smooth. And then we took them all and, painted them with bronze, actual bronze paint, and then we aged them and put wax on them and clear coated them. When we were done, they looked like an aged bronze statue.
How cool.
But next time I'm just going to 3D print a real nice one and then have them cast them. That'd be the way to go. I think you're right from the start. Those things need to be cast.
It was impressive to see you do them, though. So it was at least worth the story and worth the experience.
Oh, yeah. Worth the challenge. You got at the end, I kept one. You know, the material was almost $200 a block. And so I just went ahead and bought a block, and that's sitting on my mantle inside the house.
That's awesome. Another question I had for you was, what's the best thing you've made for yourself recently? Because I know you made, you know, your receiver. You go through your Instagram, and there's a lot of personal projects that are super cool. So what's been your favorite thing to make for yourself?
The receiver is definitely, I didn't design the way it looks. We made these for Western Electric. But if something comes across that's cool, I definitely make one for myself. And this one was designed and it's just beautiful, the receiver. And you can buy these now from Western Electric. But it was a project that we took on. We did the manufacturability design on it to make sure it bolted together and worked. But the aesthetic design was done by a guy that's just phenomenal, making beautiful stuff. And we, just like that, you know, that trophy, we made one for ourselves. The Darksaber, I made about 5 for ourselves. And then, you know, this Western Electric amp, we made one of those for ourselves. I polished it. I put tubes in there that they're not fully functioning tubes because this was just a prototype. I bought a Raspberry Pi, put some software on there that runs audio. And now our whole entertainment system runs off of that Raspberry Pi. And it's got a high fidelity audio card, DAC sitting on top of the Raspberry Pi and the touch screen and all that stuff. That was a fun project. Other than that, you know, just 3D printing. I didn't think 3D printing was going to be real useful when I got one, but now it's a significant part of our business. And
oh, really?
You know, so we have like my motorcycle, I broke a rear view mirror off a side view mirror. I designed it, 3D printed it, and then put it on there. And now I have a side view mirror that's just printed out of ASA and spray painted and sanded and glossed and looks like the real one, you know, but it's just 3D printed. But we run production on 3D printed parts, prototypes, and we just have a couple of Ender 3s that cost about $160, you know, and they've made us thousands of dollars, you know.
So how do you find 3D printing work? Because that's something, I mean, I've gotten into 3D printing, but you know, I've only seen like 3D hubs or something like that. I've never actually had a customer be like, hey, I want this 3D printed. And maybe it's because of the customers I keep. But like, you know, how do you find 3D printing work?
Everything that I do comes through my website. And I built my own website. I took pictures and I used a software on Mac and built that. And then it just, I make sure I make a page for each thing that I do. So instead of just putting on my one page and just saying, these are all the things I do, I make sure I build a separate web page that falls under a folder that Google crawls, and it'll say, one will say antique automotive, you know, reverse engineering, 3D printing. And the way Google crawls it, if someone types in 3D printing in Chattanooga, it's going to hit my site before it hit anybody else's, just because I set the website up to capture that, as well as, you know, all the companies I've ever worked for, they're all my customers. And so they know full well what I'm capable of. And so, you know, I worked for Mueller as their R&D guy. And so now I get a lot of 3D work, 3D printing work from them. You know, and there's other companies that we do prototyping work before we make the product. They want to see it work. Maybe it holds a glass bottle. We do a lot of work for Jack Daniels.
Oh, cool.
But we 3D print all the fixtures. We take it down and it has to fit a glass bottle within a particular tolerance. And so we 3D print it. And the Ender 3s, they hold plus or minus 5 all day long, if not closer, and a lot of like X and Y.
Right.
Z, you know, not so much, but X and Y, they hold a good tolerance all day. And so if it fits the bottle, then when we machine it, it's going to fit. And so the 3D printers become instrumental in a lot of our business.
That's great. Have you done any modifications to them, or are they pretty bone stock Enders?
Just changed out the hot ends to make sure we can get it hot. We need to be able to get real hot. But other than that, one of the biggest upgrades is just updating the motherboard. So it's got a better processor and sends more data to the steppers, and then that way you get a lot smoother path. But for the most part, you know, they're pretty stock. We didn't do a lot, just the hot ends. Make sure, because we run an ASA all day, and it's 260 Celsius and 110 on the bed. You got to run a little hotter than what they say on the beds to get them to stick and not to warp. But ASA is basically ABS, but it's just got a material in it that keeps it from warping in the sunlight. It's UV stabilized.
Okay.
So that's just our go-to material now because it's strong. It's got good layer adhesion and it won't warp if you let it sit in the sun. Like PLA, you know, you hang something up on your mirror and you come back in, it's all
right. Yeah. So does that mean it also doesn't warp off the bed as much as ABS?
Oh, it will warp off the bed like crazy unless you run it hot. Right.
Okay.
And the more infill you put in, the more it's going to warp.
Right.
Especially on the bottom layer. So if you keep the bottom layer pretty thin, then it's not going to warp too much. And then you keep the side walls and the top walls real thick, and then you're not going to see much warping. But yeah, you got to keep it on the bed. You got to keep it really hot. Hot as that thing will get, and you got to use a lot of hairspray. I don't use any of that stick glue or any of that. Hairspray seems to do the trick, and then you just wash it all.
Okay. Very interesting. Chief Bub, Alex Curran asked, are you in the market for a new machine, and how will you justify the purchase?
Now I get machine salesmen that come by all the time, and I had one from Makino come by. I think it was from Makino. He left his card here. And, yeah, Makino, that's him. Came back in. They always insult you, you know,
right.
They come in and a good friend of mine used to be the distributor for, Mazax in Nashville. And, you know, when I started, you know, we were at IMTS. I think that year that I met you was one of his last years that he was ever going to do it. He's retiring. And we went out to his favorite pizza place and had a glass of wine and just chilling. And he's like, you're not going to start another one of those Haas shops, are you? And I'm like, well, I could buy your machine at $110,000 or I could buy a Haas machine for $55,000.
Right.
So, yeah, the Makino guy comes by last week and he's like, hey, if you ever want to get serious, you know, and get a Makino, you can. And I'm like, get serious. I've got three machines. Two of them are paid for. And, you know, why would I buy another machine if these things are still holding 1,000s? So they do everything I want to do, you know. And right. The Herco guy came in and kind of, they all slide little things in there on Haas because they just don't like them. But these machines are fantastic. They run great. They hold tolerance. I don't have a maintenance ever. I don't take care of them because
right.
I'm too busy. And, you know, the TM2P, I've had it since 2014. And, it runs fantastic and holds one all day long, you know, and it has a little backlash, but I had that literally the day I bought it because it was used. I'm pretty sure somebody wrecked it and messed up the stepper motor, but I programmed all that out of it and it works great. So I'm not in the market because my goal is to start a small shop, not hire anybody, work 3 days a week. I've got no retirement plan. My retirement plan is, when I get there, I'm going to need to stay busy and work anyway. And so I'm just going to work in here at my own pace 3 days a week. I'm working, you know, basically 3 days a week as it is now, because everything's almost paid off in just a few years. So I don't see the need to go buy another piece of equipment that I'm going to have to work hard for and put someone in front of. I guess it just kind of goes against my plan. I don't want to die, you know?
Right. No, I really like that. I think that's. There's so much of that, you know, grind culture, and you've got to build a million-dollar business kind of thing from social media that we all, whether we absorb it or not, it's there and it's in our face all the time. So it's really nice to hear the counterpoint to that of just like, no, I just want to like have fun and do cool stuff.
Yeah, if I want to take off, I just leave. You know, I got a little Thruxton back here motorcycle, and I just, you know, I set a part up, I hit go, I've automated everything through the software. It probes itself. When I show back up, it runs for an hour or something. I go for a motorcycle ride, come back, look at the screen. It says, you know, this one critical dimension, it's correct. You know, and it's the last part that I ran. I ran four parts at a time. And now I just take the parts out, throw new parts in there and go ride again. You know, I've automated job shop to the best of my ability, you know, without robotics and all that stuff.
That's amazing. That's really, really cool. Well, that brings us to shop news and new things. Anything new? You said you're producing a run of those stems. You know, where can people find that kind of stuff? Do you have any other products that you're spinning up?
Yeah, we got lots of products that we're starting to develop. I want to get out of the job shop to a degree, even though I like doing it. I still want to keep the weird products, but I don't want to do automotive fixtures and stuff like that anymore. So we're trying to build Chipmunkies up where we can have some good YouTube videos, training materials, but also projects. Because one thing I see as a big hole is training for technology centers and colleges, and somebody needs to be able to say, what's the workflow on this product and how do you get the most out of using Fusion instead of going around and piecing it all together? Just watch a video that says, this is our workflow. This is how we design the jaws. This is how we produce the part. This is how we program it all in CAM. This is why we picked all these strategies. And then they can go download that project and do it themselves. And so that's kind of a whole, there's a lot of information, don't get me wrong. And one reason I like Haas machines and Fusion is when you go to YouTube, someone's got it, someone's made a video, and you're not going to get stuck.
Yeah.
But before you get stuck, how do you learn the overview, right? How do you learn manufacturing? And so I think there should be more of that. And we want to make some products. And it's going to be available on CNCtutorials.com. I don't know how I got that domain. I typed it in and I got it.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, that is amazing.
I just typed it in. It was like, yeah, this is available. I was like, purchase for $9. So, Chipmunkies isn't available because someone sells wine and they're called Chipmunkies. That's our biggest competitor right now. Messing up our Google hits is a wine store. That's our project. And we're making motorcycle parts, mountain bike parts, BMX parts, just odds and ends projects that you can download 3D printer machine. And we'll see how it goes. But right now I'm excited about it.
That's great. I think that, like you said, there's a lot of content out there that's just like how to tackle this one specific problem, but there's not a lot that teaches you how to think as a machinist. And I think that that's really important.
Yeah. I had a company a long time ago where we made training materials. It was called Conceptual Education because that was the goal, right? I made a bunch of YouTube videos back in 2006, and they were the concepts behind why a machinist does what he does. And, they are impossible to watch. They're horrible. They're 3D animated from the beginning to the end, and they miss that personal aspect of being able to look someone in the eye that's doing it. But if you get a chance, definitely look up Chipmunky videos and check out those 3D printed and try not to get motion sick while I do all the camera pan. It was, I don't know what I was thinking, but the content is awesome. The content is awesome. My dad and I just sat down and made great content, but they're not watchable
right.
by any stretch.
Well, I'll definitely link your YouTube channel though in the show notes so people can go check out your newer videos as well.
Yeah, appreciate that. They're good. They're good for everybody to watch.
Yeah. Well, that brings me to the last question I ask every guest, which is, what did you research this week? And it can be anything under the sun. Doesn't need to be machining related, but it's just always cool to see what other people in manufacturing are deep diving on.
What did I research this week? Nothing really, study the Bible. I want to try to understand all the rudimentary principles, fundamental principles of the Bible. That's what I've been researching this week. Try to be a better person, try to make good choices. And one of those good choices I think is not trying to build an empire, not trying to build a big business, just living simple and trying to enjoy my youth while I got it and not save it all for retirement when I'm too old to appreciate it. Who cares if you got $1 million when you retire or 2 million, like when you're young, you can still go travel and do things you want to do. And so how do you make that possible? Don't take on too much.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really refreshing viewpoint. And I'm very happy that you've come on the show to share that, because I think that's very, very much missing in today's society. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank goodness. And I like riding my motorcycle anyway. So, and my knee hurts, man. Golly, standing up on the concrete all day. I'm done.
Definitely. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you said you had some parts to make, so I'll let you get back to it. Patreon thank yous real quick before we close. Thank you, Matt Blackwell, for joining the Patreon. Helps me do episodes like this and have great people like Jeff on. And thanks everyone for listening. I'll be back next week.